Good morning, all. Can you hear me okay? I've met many of you. I look forward to meeting the rest of you. Kiddos, Adam and Cornelia, where are you? What? Cordelia. I'm going to get that, okay? I'm going to keep working on that. Thank you for being in with us today. I know it's a little boring when you have to be in with the adults, but yeah, your moms and dads and other people need to hear what's going on today. So thank you for being with us and being patient. I'm Tim Woodruff, as Mark said. Thank you for that introduction. With Interim Ministry Partners, and I want to spend a little bit of time today. This is not going to be the most inspirational of sessions. I just want to kind of help you know what you're about to experience as a church and why it's so important for you to have that experience. And so I want to help you kind of get your arms around this notion of an interim season and what benefits a church can derive from the interim season if they'll just be patient, if they'll just not rush on to the next new normal. And so that's my purpose here today. We'll do that briefly. I'm looking forward to worshiping with you, looking forward to being a part of praising God with you, and then I'm going to be talking to you about change and how we handle it, sometimes really well, sometimes not so well, but how the one inevitable reality that you see in the New Testament church is they have to deal with change. Things happen. Circumstances happen. The world falls apart. These crazy Gentiles start wanting to know about Jesus. So you got to figure out how are we going to address our culture and our society in a way that keeps us alive and relevant. And so I'm looking forward to that time with you. For today, for this moment, let me just spend a little time introducing you to us. There are eight of us who do this work. And basically what we are is we're church transition. I won't say the word experts because you're never an expert at this, but we work with churches that are in transition. Most of them are churches who've lost their minister and are looking for another minister. And in between times, there's some great things that we get to do with churches to help them be healthier, more effective in the future. Before the new guy gets here and messes everything up, we get to step in and help a church figure out who they are, where they're going, what God wants of them, how they are uniquely gifted. And all of those are things we love to do. There are eight of us going full-time with this. As Mark said, I've had one weekend off in the last year. And I think it was last weekend or the weekend before. It was wonderful. It was wonderful. Julie and I got to be together. One of the hard things about doing this kind of work is Julie and I don't have a church life together. I'm always on the road. She goes to church as a single person. So when the weekend or two I have off a year, I go with her to church just to prove there really is a husband on the scene. But that's hard because you know how much of your social life comes out of your church association. How the people that you know so deeply and intimately are often people at church, and you want to talk about that together as a couple. So I want to thank her for how supportive she is of the work I do. As you can see on the chart, we've served churches, about 15 churches full-time this year, and about, I said three there, but actually it's six or seven on a consulting basis, which is what we'll be having with you. All the way from North Carolina to California, Michigan, down to Florida, working with four churches in Texas right now. So it's just fun. And more churches are seeing the benefit of when they get to this interim time, just taking a deep breath, pausing, asking some good questions, some God-honoring questions, and then finding the right person with the right skills and the right fit so that you can move forward in the next season of the church's life with some vitality and some vigor. So that's what we do, and I wanted you to know that. The first generation of interim work, I don't know whether you've heard the names, Lynn Anderson, Mike Armour, Jim Woodruff, my dad. About 15 years ago, interim work started in Churches of Christ, but basically it was defined as big churches inviting some big-named, big-reputationed preachers to come in and fill their pulpits on Sunday mornings in order to keep the bucks and the butts in the church while during this interim period. We do that. We think it's important that we provide a consistent pulpit presence. And one of the things I'm going to be doing is working with a couple of your members. I'll only be here once a month, but we're working with a couple of your members to team with me in preaching so that November 8th, I'll be back, and I'm going to start a series on the Beatitudes. And the Sunday after that, I'm not going to be here, but one of your members, Ron or Alfonso, they'll be preaching on blessed are the poor in spirit. And the week after that, blessed are those who mourn. So there's going to be some consistency in what you're getting. We're going to try to keep you nourished, keep you encouraged with our Sunday morning assemblies and the kind of teaching you're going to get. So we're working very, very diligently on that. And then I will serve in a consulting capacity with your church leaders. So with your elders and deacons and the preaching team, we're going to start addressing some issues about who is God calling us to reach? How can we be effective at reaching our community? What things do we do well in this church? What bad habits do we need to break? Stop eating those Cheetos. We're going to start thinking about some things about the way we operate so that we can kind of get a little leaner, not meaner, but leaner, so that we can be more effective for the kingdom. And then I'm going to help lead the search process, help a search committee figure out what's the best way to go looking for the next guy, and how do we go about that in a way that honors God and listens to God. So I want to just say something to you that you'll hear the words, but they won't make much difference. About a month from now, you'll have forgotten I said this, and you're going to do the very thing I'm about to point out, and that's okay. That's all right. I want to encourage you to embrace the interim season. You are where you are for a reason. This is not by accident. It's not by caveat. You are in an interim time, not because the previous guy made a certain decision to move back to Oklahoma. I mean, that was the precipitating cause. But God knew what He was doing. He knew what He had in store for you. And so, you are in this season. Now, most churches say, okay, we're in this season. I'm glad it's going to be over in about 2 weeks. We'll have our new guy here, and we'll be so proud of him, and we'll get back to the new normal, and things will get comfortable again, and we don't have to do all this worrying and wondering, and we don't have to deal with unpredictability. And you know what? That ain't going to happen. We're not talking about weeks. We're talking about a process of months. And we're talking about a process of months because, and here's what I want you to hear, this season is not about finding the next guy to stand there. This season is about figuring out who we are as a church, what our future needs to look at, what we hope our future to be, what changes, what growth we need to encourage in order to have that future. We want to listen to God. What does God want of us, uniquely? Not them down the road, us. How has He gifted us? What skill sets do we bring that we need to pay attention to? Because you're here not by accident. God has brought you to this place at this time. What does He want us to accomplish together? We're going to be asking lots of questions about us and about our community. And we've got to do that before we ask questions about Him, because we don't know who He is until we know who we are and what we need. If we can embrace the interim season, there are lots of fun things we're going to be able to do. We're going to be able to celebrate what God has done in the Hickman Road Church. Previously, when I first heard of you, the Hickman Avenue Church, in fact, Julie, my wife, first thing she heard when I said, I'm going to Des Moines, Iowa. She's an Iowa girl. She was raised, her parents, her grandparents were here in Des Moines. They weren't associated with the Churches of Christ. They were good Lutheran or not so good Lutherans. But the first thing she said, oh, you're going to Hickman Avenue. And I got out my phone and looked. No, I think it's Hickman Road. No, it's Hickman Avenue. Well, that's how far back she knew you. And that's how I first heard about you, actually. So, we're going to get to celebrate what God has done, the people He has brought here, the good things that you've done in ministry. We're going to listen very carefully to the call of God in the life of this church right now. You cannot go far as a church hearing the call of God on this church 40 years ago. We can be glad for that call. We can celebrate that call. But if God doesn't have a call for the life of this church right now, today, it's time to disband and go somewhere else. God wants to walk on a journey with you right now. Where does He want to go? How can we walk with Him? We're going to spend some time clarifying our mission. We're going to spend some time realizing that each church has a general mission, glorify God. But the time for just kind of general, vague mission, here, obey the Bible. Do what it says. Time for that's over, guys. We've got to put an edge on our missional blade. We've got to figure out, yes, we need to do some things like love God and love each other and love the lost. Anybody take exception to that? But how does Hickman Road do that? We can't do everything. So many of our churches, they're doing things that are about a mile wide and a millimeter deep. And when they die and go away, nobody will remember they've been here because their impact is so minimal. We'd rather have a narrow focus and a deep influence. I remember one time, way back when I first started ministry in Lincoln, Nebraska, we would have people over for lunch, as preachers should, right, on Sunday afternoons. And I remember a girl named, I think her name was Jeannie. I mean, she was like 98 pounds, dripping wet. And she and her husband came over. She wore, you know what stiletto heels are? She wore stiletto heels and proceeded to poke holes in my linoleum kitchen floor. I had to replace the floor when she left. Best lesson in ministry I ever learned. Even a little bit of weight focused on a particular spot can make a dent. So many of our churches today, so many of the churches we work with, they're wearing flip-flops. They're wearing snow boots. They're wearing snow shoes. They're spreading their weight as much as they can. And the result is they're just not leaving much of a footprint behind. I don't want you to be like that. I want you to make a kingdom difference. But you'll only do that to the extent that you know what your mission is. And you know what God is calling you specifically to accomplish. We're going to spend some time talking about church leadership and how we can be more effective leaders. We're going to address some church culture issues. In your families, any of your families have little quirks? Some. Yeah, and I know where the quirk is in your family. You know, all of our families have quirks, some of which are endearing and lovable, some of which are just difficult. Well, we're going to look at some of the endearing and difficult quirks about this church and try to address some of those. We're going to look at some ministry issues. I'm going to ask you to refocus on matters that matter. Do you know what hills you're willing to die on? And are there some matters that maybe once upon a time we would have died for that in the world we live in, where people strap bombs to their chests and walk into crowded markets, suddenly those matters just don't matter much anymore? We're going to have that conversation. Let me just mention a few. What time do I have, Mark? Okay, that's plenty. There's some theological things I want you to understand. As we guide you through, as we partner with you through this interim season, we're going to be talking some theology. And I know that it's basic, but I hope it'll be welcome. This season is about seeking God, about listening to God. It is a prayer-filled, Spirit-driven time. This is not about questionnaires or resumes or letters of reference. This is about listening for God's call, listening for God's will. And we're going to spend some time together as a church, coming together and praying, asking God to walk with us through this time. If you can imagine, we're the people of Israel. And we're setting off from Egypt, going where we know not. And we want to get there 2 weeks from now. I promise you it's not going to take us 40 years. But along the way, we need that pillar of cloud by day, that pillar of fire by night, leading us and showing us where to go. And the way we invoke that presence of God is through prayer and seeking His Spirit. So we're going to spend some time doing that as a church. I'm going to be teaching you a theology of calling. Again, as we get to the point where we're looking for the next guy, this is not a matter of, man, do I love the photo of this guy and his family. He has a great head of hair. This is not about how scintillating he can be in 25 minutes on Sunday morning. This is not even about who can we get to come here for the minimal amount of salary we can afford to pay. This is about the call of God. God already knows who He wants to be here in the next season of this church's life. He knows who His preferred minister is. His hands have been on that person for that person's whole life. God has been bringing him along, maturing him, equipping him, training him. God's given him certain sort of experiences, all along with his eye on Hickman Road and the partnership this minister is going to have with you. He knows who that person is. We don't. Our job is not to put on our reading glasses and be wise readers of resumes, discerning the truth from the exaggeration. Our job is to be quiet and listen for God's voice. Try to see His hand. And when we recognize it, respond to it as God's people. So we're going to insist that this is a theology of calling. Just as Moses stood before a burning bush and God said, "My people are in trouble. This is what I want you to do." And Moses said, "No thanks. I've got sheep to tend to. I'd rather be doing other things." God has to kind of slap him around and say, "Hush, you go do what I told you to do." But there's the call of God in Moses' life. Think about Noah. Think about Abraham. Think about David. Think about Joshua. Think about Jonah. Think about the prophets. Think about the judges. In every single instance in the Old Testament, you have God recognizing the need of His people, calling a particular person to step in and take care of the job. In the New Testament, it's the same thing. It's Jesus walking along the Sea of Galilee, pointing across the water at Peter and saying, "Hey, you come and follow me." It's Paul just going along the Damascus Road. God says, "Whoop, you, come. I've got a job for you." It's John. It's Timothy. It's Luke. It's keep all by the call of God. Now, I know you've heard some rubbish about the idea that God no longer works that way. You believe that if you want to. I think the God who is the same yesterday, today, and forever is probably going to work today in about the same way He did all through the Old Testament and all through the New Testament. He's going to knock someone off a horse and say, "My people at Hickman Road have a need, and you are my chosen instrument." Now, one of the reasons we talk about that so strongly is 16 months from now, when your guy is here and he preaches a sermon that really makes you mad. Have preachers ever been known to do that? What I want you to remember this time is not, "Well, I would have hired the other guy," or I didn't like this guy from the start, or, you know, I'm not trying to imitate anybody in particular, but I'm just telling you, I know how we talk some. What I want you to do is walk out of here mad, and then remind yourself on the drive home, God called this man here. We invited him because we believe God called him. Maybe the appropriate response here is not anger. Maybe the appropriate response here is to treat him as a God-called person who deserves my respect and patience and grace. So I think what I'll do is I'm going to invite him to coffee tomorrow morning. And we're going to talk this through because I want to honor God as I honor him. How does that sound? Thank you. That was the audience participation part of today's program. So, all right. We're going to engage in something called communal discernment as well. Critical to our process that I want you to be aware of. There's nobody in this church, as I told the group yesterday I met with, who goes up to Mount Sinai every week, comes down with the will of God written on tablets of stone, and the rest of us, our job is simply to read what he tells us God wants and submit to it. There's nobody here who's that guy. I think if there is that guy here, would you raise your hand? You know what God's will is. You know exactly what needs to happen. All this church needs to do is just listen to you. Are you that guy? Sure? Wow. That's bold. In truth, we're going to discern together God's will. And that's going to mean sometimes we're going to disagree. Sometimes we're going to see that differently. But the process that is godly is not me browbeating you to take my point of view. The process is we listen to each other, we respect each other, we try to find a common place that we can be. More importantly, we try to find the place God wants us to be. And we do that better as a group than any one of us individually. Sorry. Communal discernment. Okay. This is a timeline. And Mark, do we have copies of this? Do we ever get... Maybe in the next week or two we can get... I want you to look at this and kind of wrap your arms around it. There is a process involved. And I want you to know that that process takes some time. Sorry. How many of you have teenage children? And do you ever give them... Maybe you're avoiding giving them dating advice? Okay. All right. Are these 2 years? Okay. How many of you would advise your teenage son, son, you're 18, you've got 2 weeks to go find a wife? What would your advice be? No way. No way. Would it be take some time? A long time? Wouldn't it be the longer time you take, the more likely it is the marriage is going to take? Wouldn't it be, son, you've got to know who you are before you figure out who she is. Wouldn't that be right? Ron? Wow. Wow, that's great. Teens, we're not recommending that length of time, but...
There was nothing wrong with
that. No, not at all. Do you see that little... the line across the second top from the top? The 1, 2, 3, 4, do you see that line? Those are not hours. Those are months. You ought to anticipate that we are in a process that is going to have someone here to minister to this church and lead this church by next summer. Now, can we do it faster than that? Yes. But we're not going to. Because far better than doing it quickly is doing it well. You can do it well, or you can do it quickly. What you can't do is both. So I'm asking you, the leadership of this church is asking you, would you be patient with us while we spend some time first looking at ourselves and our community and what God is doing in other churches around us? And would you give us some time to cultivate some relationships among people that we know and respect and can help us identify quality, character, competent ministers. In phase one, the inquiry phase, you see that? We're going to be doing some assessments of this congregation. You took a little piece of an assessment. We're going to do a longer, more in-depth assessment. We're going to be doing some assessment of our community, looking at projections and trends and talking to the police chief and the mayor and high school principals and figuring out who are we as a community and where are the doors for the gospel that are going to be open to us. We're going to be talking to some other churches around us. How is God changing lives through your ministry? We're going to take the time to do some assessment. And guys, that takes a few weeks to do it right. And then the identification phase, if you can see that. We're going to... Who has it? Mike Lewis? We used as an example yesterday. We're going to find some people, and I'm just throwing this out as an example. We're going to find some people like Mike Lewis. How many of you know Mike? Yeah. He knows what preaching ministry is about. He's done it. He has a pretty good network of ministers. He knows who's effective, who's not. He knows who has their act together, who doesn't. He knows who's authentic and genuine and who's a sham. He knows some of those things about his minister buddies. And because he has a connection to this church, he's going to be willing to give us some time and attention. And what we're going to do is go to people like Mike Lewis. I'd love to have 8 or 10 of that kind of person. And we're going to say to that person, Mike, would you pray with me for a week? I'm going to be praying for you, your family, your ministry, your influence. I'm going to be praying that God will protect your character. Would you pray for the Hickman Road Church for 1 week? And let God, of all the people you know, let God percolate to the surface a name or two that you think we need to be talking to. We're not going to put an ad in the Christian Chronicle. We're not going to post a notice on the ACU website. We're not going to try to get 250 resumes in here. We're going to be happy if we can get 12, 15, 20 high caliber pre-vetted candidates. That's where we're going to invest our time and effort. And then in the interview phase, we're going to actually start talking to candidates. But notice, that's not going to be till sometime late winter, early spring. We'll start talking to candidates, figuring out which of them want to talk to us and which ones we want to talk further with. And then finally, your committee is going to bring to your elders, here's the guy we believe God has called to be our next minister. They're not going to bring two, they're not going to be three, they're going to bring one. We will not do the beauty contest this time around. Those of you who have any length of time in Churches of Christ know what I mean by that. You pick your three top candidates, you bring them in on three consecutive weekends, you let them hit you with their best shot, and then you vote about which one you like best. Any of you ever done that before? Yeah, okay. That has to be the world's worst way to choose a minister. Number one, it's about this deep. You've been with him for 1 weekend. You've shaken his hands once. You've heard the best sermon he has to offer. Every other sermon he's got could be a dog. But you wouldn't know that based on that. And most importantly, again, 16 months down the road, when the preacher you choose does something that makes you mad, the beauty contest just sets a church up for people to cross their arms and say, well, I didn't vote for him. He wasn't the candidate I wanted to see, so we're not going to do that. The search committee is going to bring the elders one candidate. We believe this is the person called to be our next minister. The elders are going to take some time to say, are they right? They're going to get to know the candidate, listen to the sermons, and read the writings. And sometimes elders come back and say, no, this is not our guy. Try again. And that's exactly what they ought to be doing. But eventually, we're going to bring a candidate to you as the church. The search committee is going to say, we believe this is our guy. The elders are going to say, we agree with that. And then you're going to have a chance to pray about it, listen to some sermons, read some writings, meet him in small groups, hear him teach, hear him preach, then give feedback to your shepherds over a period of time. Do you agree he's the one? Do you see what the committee sees, what the elders see? As I said yesterday, if having gone through that, half the church says, if that guy comes here, I'm going to become a Muslim. We're going to listen to that. That's significant. We're going to pay attention. But that's never happened. And hopefully it won't happen here. Okay. I forgot to click as I was going along. Okay, so I finished with a couple of minutes to spare. A lot of information, I know, and we'll go over some of this again because I know how quickly Israel forgets. But are there any questions that you have? Does that prompt any inquiries from you? How does that sound to you?
Awesome.
Hey. Excited to find out who we can be. Yeah. Anyone else?
I think it's a good thing, as you mentioned. You know, this didn't come about accidentally. This is God exercising His, as I spoke of last week, throwing the curve at us for growth and for strength.
Yes.
And for contemporary ministries and organizing ourselves for the future.
Good. Thank you, Carlos, right?
Yeah.
By the way, could I say one of the most encouraging things to me about Hickman Road and who you are right now? Is what a diversity I'm seeing. Look at how old is this one?
4 months.
And I won't ask the oldest member of the church here, but it's not 4 months, I'll guarantee you that. We got black and white. Thank God for that. We've got widows, and we've got single people, and we've got, you know, just this gamut. What a strength for your church. And I'm really excited about that. That's something I want us to build on. That's a good thing. It reminds me, frankly, of a kind of church Paul would like to build. He didn't want just a bunch of Jews over here meeting by themselves and looking down their noses at the Gentiles, right? We're going to talk about that in the next hour. He wanted all manner of people, rich, poor, Jew, Gentile, slave, free, all manner of people together, understanding what it means to be God's new community. That's exciting, and that's fun. All right, let's take a little break, and I look forward to worshiping with you in a few moments.